My guest this week on the show is Ken Pasternak. Ken is from the US, but has lived for years in Europe, specifically Finland. And we have a couple of things in common. First of all, we both have published a book through the same publisher in London. That's Alison Jones at Practical Inspiration. And that's a specialist house publishing many, many books for first-time business book authors. In fact, Alison is a previous guest on the show from about 2 years back. The second thing that we have in common is that Ken and I are both privileged to be members of Marshall Goldsmith's 100 Coaches. And that's just the beginning, because today's a fascinating dip into three things. First of all, Ken's background, how he came to be in consulting. Secondly, what his business is and the kinds of organizations he works with and helps and what he sells. And thirdly, his brand. What does Ken do and how do people reach out and engage him? And what you'll hear is, in fact, that Ken is doing a lot more keynote speaking, which is something that I hope to focus on this year a lot more in 2024. This is the Training Business Podcast.
Hey, and welcome to the trainingbusiness.com podcast. Every week, we bring you exciting news and interviews with training business experts and training business entrepreneurs from around the world. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. Here's your host, Mark Garrett Hayes.
Hey, welcome to the show. This is the Training Business Podcast, and it's the weekly show for people like you and me. If you're in the business or want to be in the business of consulting, training, coaching, and facilitation, you're in the right place, because every Thursday, whether it's an episode with me or, as is usually the case, an episode with a guest on the show, this show is about helping you with monetizing your expertise, your knowledge in the form of products, keynote services, online courses, and so on. And every week, I get loads personally from listening to people share their stories. And we typically focus increasingly on three things: one, people's backgrounds; two, their business; and thirdly, their brands. If you've not yet subscribed, please click on follow or subscribe to be notified of great episodes as they come out on your podcast platform of choice. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here, Mark.
You're speaking to me right now from the States, but you actually live in Helsinki in, I won't even pronounce that properly, Uusimaa. Is it in Finland?
Uusimaa is the region. Call it Helsinki, Finland, the largest.
Helsinki, right, the capital. Who doesn't know Helsinki? And the reason we're talking is that we have a lot in common. We're both authors. We're both people who are coaches for Marshall Goldsmith. But more important to me is what we have in common with people listening, which is that you are a consultant, you're a speaker, you're a facilitator, and you generate a full-time living from helping people through your programs and so on. Let's start with the first B today. And I always think of three Bs: the background, the business, and the brand. Tell me about your background. How'd you get into consulting and facilitation?
Well, I'll give you another B, and that was banking. When I graduated university in the States, I went to Yale. I went and lived in France for a year. I loved it, but I had to go back to the States and get a job. And I found myself working in corporate banking. And I did that for 6 years and absolutely loved it. But I kept asking during my reviews, can I get back overseas? So they sent me to London to the European Training Center for Citibank, which was the bank. So I got into the teaching and training business through Citibank. I did that for 2 years, then went back to a line assignment as a banker in Finland, where I met my wife, and did that for 4 years. Then they gave me a very unusual assignment, and that was to be seconded to the Central Bank of Turkey to build a residential training center for bankers. And they gave me a dilapidated hotel on the Asian side of Istanbul, and I turned it into a world-class residential training center to train Turkish bankers. So training, development, project management, it was all there. So when my next assignment came up, I wasn't ready to go back to become a banker per se. So I joined a group in Citibank that did consulting for other banks. And I opened up an office in Brussels for the department. They had offices already in Bogota and Manila and New York and one other place. And I can't remember right now. And for 3 years, I was selling consulting assignments, doing consulting assignments, and doing training, doing teaching, moving more towards organization development rather than risk management and the things that I was trained on earlier. Mm-hmm. I did selling skills training, and I did negotiation skills training. When I left that assignment and I left Citibank, I went to a bank in London called the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. And that was a new bank started in 91 to assist the transition of Eastern Europe from communist to market economies. And I eventually headed up a learning and development department there, which wasn't training the bankers in the European Bank, but doing projects outside in Russia, in Uzbekistan, in Poland. And there I went back to my skill in terms of institution building, and I helped build, with the help of different countries and experts, banking schools, business schools in many of the countries of Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. At some point, we had a change in leadership, and they weren't keen on maintaining my department. So I outsourced my team, and I took the existing projects, and that got me into the consulting and training business, and I moved the family back to Finland. So I've been in Finland since then. I've built two or three consulting businesses, actually, and all around training leaders in my expertise being leadership development and team building and so on. So starting in banking, moving to organization development, institution building, and for the last 25 years or more, I've been doing programs around the world, training leaders and business people in leadership, teamwork, communication, cross-cultural understanding, and building a winning culture.
How did you settle on what you're good at and what people are willing to pay for?
It's a great question. I haven't thought of it. It was kind of moving into things which felt comfortable, things I enjoyed, and things where I was getting positive response from our clients. Part of a job as a banker and as a consultant is you're selling and you're meeting all kinds of interesting people, and you kind of move into a groove that is comfortable for you and seems to work. So it wasn't a conscious, this is exactly where I need to be. It was, this is working, I'm enjoying it, let's do more.
And at what point did you decide, hey, I'm making a full-time living doing this right now, I'm not going back into working as an employee, I'm going to focus on building the business of Ken and literally putting my eggs in that basket? And the reason I ask that is that sometimes people say to me, it's a conversation they have to have with their wife or spouse, because it comes with inherent risks, you know, leaving full-time employment and becoming someone who's on the road, generating their own leads and literally selling their time through products, through services.
You went exactly where I was going to go. When we moved back to Finland, I had been working in a large international organization for 22 years. And I said to my wife, this is an experiment. Let's see if this works. It may be one and done in terms of years, because I may have to move back into the corporate world to make a living. But it clicked. I had a little bit of a runway, as I said, because I outsourced my team. So I had 18 months of projects to run down from the EBRD, the bank in London. And as I was running those down, I started to network and build new business opportunities, and they clicked. I also wrote a book called Managing Your Strengths with a co-author about the LIFO method, the life orientations method, which helped build a little bit of a business base to do programs using LIFO. And I networked. I called up old friends. I ran into friends who then offered me opportunities. One was to do a 3-year action learning program at Ford Motor Company. And that led to a few other things. And that led actually to do some work for a large law firm in London around Formula One. They wanted a program to teach their lawyers business acumen. And they said, can you build that around Formula One? And I and two other people designed a program where I role played the vice president of strategy for Audi, trying to decide how to enter Formula One. And we did that program for 3 years, including at the racetrack in Barcelona a couple of times, but mainly in the UK at the Williams Formula One Center near Oxford, and 50 times over 3 years. And that then led to the three of us writing Performance at the Limit, Business Lessons from Formula One Racing. And that came out originally in 2005, published by Cambridge University Press. And that opened up a whole other avenue of opportunity for me to do speaking engagements, to do training around the Formula One metaphor of leadership, innovation, teamwork, communication, managing change, and all the things that a Formula One team has to do in a very competitive environment. So it was a leap of faith at the start. It was a discussion with my wife, and things worked out.
What a story. And it's funny how you found yourself working in Formula One indirectly, and you perhaps couldn't have imagined doing that at some point.
I didn't know much, but I was hired for the job because after working at Ford, the people who were putting the program together thought I knew something about racing. And while Finland has a history of great racing drivers, Formula One drivers, it wasn't really anything of my interest. So I had a steep learning curve. Luckily, my two colleagues who I did the program and the book with were experts in Formula One, one having been in it as commercial director for two of the teams, and the other professor at Cranfield School of Management who had written a lot about motorsport. So I had good teachers, and I picked it up and I studied a lot and got to a lot of races, got to meet all the people in the industry. And I'm still doing that. So it's great fun.
When we think of your business, then it sounds like you have a couple of strings to your bow. On the one hand, you're a speaker. There's income from that. You're also a consultant, and you also facilitate workshops. If I said to you, Ken, what kinds of organizations bring you in and what kinds of problems do you solve with your services and products, what would you say? You mentioned leadership a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, let me first say that I've moved away from consulting and more towards executive development for a very personal reason. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be that involved any longer as my career developed and my children started to have grandchildren, and I wanted to travel less. But in the early days, it was about change management. It was about helping organizations, banks and corporates, both all around the world, in the Middle East, in Europe, in Asia, a little bit in the US as well, dealing with the transformation that they all have to undergo. Business is dynamic and change is happening all the time. And some organizations are better suited for that than others, and they need a little bit of guidance and help. And usually, as you know as well, to make change happen, it needs to happen from the top down. And so you end up working with the senior leadership to build self-awareness, to build understanding, to build a clarity of what their role and purpose is in creating the change. Over time, I've done less consulting. I move more into executive development, where I can do 1 or 2 day programs to light some fires, to help create new mindsets in organizations about what needs to be done, what they need to do. But I pulled away from actually trying to help them on a day-to-day basis to make it happen. And then the third evolution, which is I'm moving into now, is a bit even less of that and more just keynote speaking, trying to wake up people to some ideas using the Formula One metaphor as an exciting and different way of doing it.
And you're also a visiting lecturer. Does that help in terms of business generation, being a lecturer for an MBA program at universities?
Yeah, I've done quite a few. I've done like 6 or 7 executive MBA programs in Turkey and Denmark and the US. It doesn't necessarily generate business, but it's another one of those benchmarks that people can look at you and say, hey, if they're willing to hire you to come in and teach for a couple of days, you must have something to offer. The credibility factor of it, I guess. The generation of new opportunities more has come from keynote speaking, and not just necessarily in one company, but a keynote to an industry group of HR professionals or senior leadership, where maybe one, maybe two will follow up afterwards and say, hey, that was interesting. Do you do this for larger groups if we brought you in to our sales meeting or our leadership conference? And that's probably been the best lead, doing these, and sometimes even doing it pro bono, being willing to go out and pay my own. Oftentimes they'll pay your expenses, but not necessarily a fee. But it's a paid proposal opportunity. Just like you said, you've mentioned before to me, writing a book is an opportunity to put yourself out there as a proposal, as a business card. So also the other opportunity you have in doing keynote speaking is if you can get it videoed, it's another tool you can have to put onto your website, to put on LinkedIn and elsewhere to start promoting yourself.
Is that something you've thought of selling, a recorded session somewhere as a product?
No. I get my buzz from being in person with groups. And I'm at the time of my career where I don't have to do things I don't want to do. So I will always lean to the opportunity to speak live. I've done some virtual speaking. I've done some virtual teaching. We all had to move that way, and we're doing a podcast just like this now. But I get my kicks out of being in front of people. And I only recently started to do kind of one-off speaking engagements. I used to like to go early, meet the people, understand the company, invest that kind of time so I can deliver a very tailored type of presentation. You know, I'd run to my room at lunch and start changing my presentation based on what I heard that morning when the company allowed me to sit in on their session. And I'd still love to do that. It probably on a per hour basis, it's not the best use of my time in terms of money received, but it gives me a great pleasure that I can really tailor what I'm talking about to the audience that I'm talking to.
The keynote leads, we'll call them, that appear, are they stage side or are they afterwards after you deliver a keynote that someone says, hey, Ken, I wonder if you could come and do that for us too?
It happens that way. Mm-hmm. It happens after a keynote and I'm back in that city. I meet up with someone I met at the conference for a lunch and say, hey, how things? And they say, by the way, I talked to my manager and he thinks maybe we should bring you in and can you give us a proposal? Sometimes it's someone who's seen my book. I did something in Scandinavia for a large transportation manufacturer out of the blue. Someone had seen Performance at the Limit, Business Lessons from Formula One. And he said, this speaks exactly to what we're trying to do with our company, particularly in terms of culture. And he said, could you come and speak to us in Stockholm on our culture day? And I ate that up. I went, met him the night before, easy flight over to Stockholm from Helsinki. We had dinner. And again, when I spoke the next day, I really tailored it to what they were trying to achieve in that large organization, an international group. So there's no one way that leads come in. It could be from your book. It could be from a podcast. It could be from a speaking engagement. I just now, Mark, for the first time ever, talked to a speaker bureau. And I will be included in a speaker bureau. I don't want to say the name yet because it's not up and running, but we've agreed in principle. And I had not done that previously because I wanted control over my schedule. When I spoke to a speaker bureau 10 years ago, and they said, well, you know, you can turn us down once, but that's it. And if we want you in Boise, Idaho, or we want you in pick a city, you've got to be there. And at that time, I was transitioning a little bit in, as I said, moving away from consulting into a little bit more executive development speaking. And I wanted to do it on my terms. And I'll share one other personal thought. Our grandchildren started to be born about 12 years ago. And my wife said to me in a very erudite manner, she said, for the first 10 years of your grandchildren's lives, you are a superhero as the grandfather. They want to be with you. They want to spend time with you. But, you know, by the time they're 10 or 11, they've got their clubs, they've got their friends, they've got their own interests, and they'll want to see you, but not so often. They have things to do. And she was spot on. My grandchildren are now 9 to 13. And I had a discussion with my wife. And I said, now is the time maybe I should sign up with a speaker bureau. I don't feel as if I should be around as much as I was around. Because I loved being a grandfather. I love being a grandfather. The school runs, the doctor runs, the football matches, you know, the whole thing. So I'm ready to spread my wings in a different way now for the next period of time. And that's why I'm signing up with a speaker bureau at this time.
That's very exciting. And so when you go to work with a speaker bureau, it's a bit different from working with event planners, as they call themselves typically on LinkedIn. They're focused on individual events in organizations. Could be a sales kickoff or some kind of launch or something like that. When you're at a speaker bureau level, you're on really almost like a different kind of F1 or Formula One circuit, right? You're you're competing with a lot of really big names, charging lots of big money. Was that daunting, that idea of going out there and trundling on the world stage and in effect competing with some names for the same gig through a speaker bureau?
You know, it's the beginning of that journey for me now. Mm. So we'll let, you know, if we talk a year from now, I'll let you know. But I don't feel the daunting nature of this. If someone sees my profile and sees what I have to offer and thinks it might be interest to them, the sale is halfway done. And then it's just a matter of coming to terms and timing. So if I'm on a list with 50 other speakers, or, you know, you have your picture and your profile and maybe your price, let's see what happens. But it's an interesting way to get business. And you're right. There are celebrities out there who get gigs around the world for enormous fees. I'm not looking for enormous fees. I'm looking for a great experience and a chance to travel and meet new people and tell my story and try to help them as well.
Well, for people listening, it's a very encouraging story. And it's funny how life, professional life and personal life, takes all kinds of twists and turns, and you end up somewhere perhaps you never thought you'd be in. As a final thought then, where can people find out more about you? Ken, you obviously have some, we're both authors and we have a common connection in Allison, who helped me to produce my book. Where would you like people to go to read about you, connect with you, and maybe hire you? You never know.
Well, of course, LinkedIn is available. So Ken Pasternak on LinkedIn or Facebook. I concentrate on those two. I found those reach the people who are interested in me and I'm interested in as well. I'm on Instagram and X, but I don't use it very much. And my website, kppasternak.com, is probably the other place to see me. The two books, which I would recommend people if they're interested, one is Performance at the Limit, Business Lessons from Formula One Racing. It's published by Cambridge University Press. It's in its third edition. It's been translated into Mandarin Chinese, Turkish, and Japanese. And my most recent book is called Exploding Turkeys and Spare Trousers, Adventure in Global Business. And it came up during COVID, when I was on a group who we were sharing messages and trying to support each other's LinkedIn postings. And I started to tell war stories, the stories of my adventures around the world. But I tried to keep them LinkedIn short. And if you remember the early days of LinkedIn, we were limited to 1,200 characters. So they're only one page long. And that book has 53 one-page stories. But what I did also was at the end of each of the stories, I put in a life or a business lesson that derived from that story. So it's kind of a potpourri of different adventures and maybe sharing a word of wisdom or two that might resonate with some people.
25 years as a consultant facilitator and keynote speaker. I'm sure there are lots of great stories in there. What a great title, Exploding Turkeys and Spare Trousers. I won't ask you to explain what the title means. I want people to be curious and maybe pick up a copy of the book. Ken, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being my guest today on the show.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Ken for being my guest this week on the show. And you can find Ken's book online, Exploding Turkeys and Spare Trousers, Adventures in Global Business. That's quite the title. Ken's website is also on his LinkedIn profile. That's kppasternak.com. And I'll provide all these links over on Ken's episode page on www.trainingbusiness.com. Sincere thanks to you, of course, as always, for taking time to tune in and listen to the show. If you've not yet subscribed, please click on follow or subscribe. And that's to be notified of great episodes as they appear for free on your podcast platform of choice. I appreciate your listenership and loyalty, and I look forward to your company again next Thursday. Until then, look after yourself. Bye for now.
Thanks once more for listening to this episode of the TrainingBusiness.com podcast. See you next time.